Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector. And today's topic won't just help those of us in the private rented sector, it'll actually help anyone far and wide. So in this episode, I'm pleased to be joined by Francis West, who is a specialist cybersecurity solutions and training consultancy expert and advises businesses on how to protect their business and, more importantly, their reputation from being hacked or attacked. We know that the chances of being a victim of cybercrime are very much increasing, with barely a week goes by without another big news story and a huge company having their data leaked or their website attacked. And these are just the high profile ones that make the press. According to Hiscox, small businesses in the UK, staggeringly, are targeted by around 65,000 attempted cyber attacks every day. If we think about that, that is fairly shocking. And that's before we examine the particular risks for the housing sector. We are data businesses in our sector. As a referencing company, you know, we talk about data and data security all of the time, holding so much information on tenants in terms of their bank details, how much they earn, where they live, where they work. And obviously for agents and landlords, we hold huge information about where we're collecting rent from, landlords' personal details, know your customer checks, anti-money laundering, and a whole host of things. So we are prime for targeting. Now, before I introduce Francis, I just want to say I met Francis at the Women in Estate Agency conference earlier this year. And when I looked through the agenda for all of the things that we were going to kind of cover that day, this wasn't necessarily the highlight before I went to the session. By the end of the session, there were so many things that I had personally learned that were really quite worrying. And we've been waiting for Francis to come on the pod ever since to share some of those with you. And he's going to share some tips and tricks later on in the pod. So stay tuned. So let's get started. Thank you very much for joining me, Francis. Please introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit more about you and how you got started in cyber in the first place.
Thank you very, very much, Heidi. It's a real honor and privilege to be here with you today. And I'm grateful for anybody or any company organizations to allow me to speak, because I know for a fact that every single time that I speak and I share tips and tricks and advice with people, they end up better protected. But to answer your question, why cyber? I'll give you a bit of background. I've been in the IT industry for 34 years now. And also my business partner that I work with, he's got 1 year on me. And we've always been doing security. But I would say about 2 years before COVID, I could only describe as what we saw was it like a tsunami of cyber attacks on our existing IT clients. And that's when we took the decision to start focusing on delivering what we call enterprise level cybersecurity services to the property and other sectors as well. And we don't, you know, whether you were a single one-man band, 5, 10, 50, 500 people, it doesn't matter to us. I always say that hackers and scammers goes after the size of vulnerability, not the size of people that you employ or the amount of people that you employ. So, you know, and the more we see, and I mean, from a personal point of view, I now serve on 7 different security panels. I advise the Home Office. I work with cyber resilience centers around the country. I work with cyber police units. And so I eat, sleep, and breathe the stuff. And the more I learn about it, the more I just want to put my little cybersecurity blanket around people. Because sadly, most business owners come to us after the event. You know, and I'll share some stories with you later, because it's really devastating. And this all this stuff can be avoided. But yeah. Sadly, people are not advised properly, or they don't know where to start, which means they do nothing and then hope for the best.
So I'm going to start with a real basic question. What is a cyber attack? And the reason I ask that basic question is I think they obviously come in all shapes and sizes, and sometimes are quite hard to detect potentially, or we detect them too late.
Well, I'll answer your question, but if I tell you on average now, Hackers will be on your system for 237 days. That's the national average at the moment, before people even find out that they're sitting there. Right. Hackers spend at least 95% of their time planning and 5% of their time used for the attack. So, you know, it's what is a cyber attack? I mean, what I started doing lately, I started talking more about fraud, because fraud and cyber attacks or crime is now making up 60% of all attacks in the UK, which is insane. And we'll talk later about, you know, upcoming threats. But, you know, a cyber attack could be, a phishing email that's coming, a business email compromise, a ransom attack where somebody clicked on the link and the next minute all your files are being encrypted, even if they're sitting in the cloud, by the way. Mm-hmm. Or if there's been a data breach, you know, even internal attacks could be, if somebody came and they stuck a USB pen that was infected, or somebody walks into your business, a guest or a client with an infected laptop, and you say, oh yeah, sure, come in, log into my Wi-Fi, here's a Wi-Fi, the same Wi-Fi that all these staff members use, done. You know, that it, you must, I hate to use this analogy, but think about COVID. You know, you can't see the attack until it hits you. And the same logic applies here. And then you've got things like social engineering, you've got payment fraud, you know, there are so many different ways, but ultimately a cyber attack is either a process of stealing your data without your knowledge, or it's holding you to ransom, or you lose a lot of money, or worse, you lose a lot of reputation. You know, all these people listening, yeah. I bet they spend years building up their business and they can lose it in one click.
Yeah. So I know you've spoken at a number of events. We were talking about it earlier before we even started the pod, and even at Property Mark, actually, Property Mark One. And so our industry knows you very well, but I'm quite keen to know some of the unique cyber threats that the property and the lettings industry face, and how have cyber threats evolved in our space over the last few years?
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because as you mentioned, I think briefly, about 60,000 attacks. There was a very interesting article in the Property Eye in November last year, where they now ranked the property sector as the highest attacked sector in the UK, which is insane. The biggest problem that we see in property companies is that they are not protecting their emails. So emails, if you look at all the statistics and all our personal experience, 94% of attacks are coming by email. So I always say to our clients is that you better have a very big bouncer sitting in front of your email system, because otherwise the email comes through, somebody clicks on a link, now they've installed what we call a keylogger on the PC or Mac, which you talk about some myths as well. Once they're onto your system, with or without your knowledge, the next time you log on to your CRM system and there's not two-factor authentication turned on that account, they can log in at their own time from anywhere in the world and start harvesting the data that you've been putting in, and all about your clients and about the data you hold and passports and payroll information. And that's the biggest risk right now. And if we go from there, then you look at things like password management. You know, I dealt just last week with the estate agent where several people in the business were using the same password to log into a system. And I'm like, do you know if that password has been compromised? Well, what do you mean? Imagine that password is now sitting for sale on the dark web.
Yeah.
What will happen then? Because then they can log in. Or what happens if one of those staff members leave? Now you've got to go and change all the passwords again. You know, so I think, I know that one of the biggest issue in this sector is that people are not using unique passwords. Because never mind two-factor authentication, that's another layer. My advice is always that people should have two-factor authentication turned on, or multi-factor, on every single system that they use.
And I know you mentioned email. Okay, as a society, and definitely as an industry, we have become even more reliant on email, haven't we, than ever before?
Yeah.
You know, there used to be a lot more face-to-face contact with agents. There was obviously a lot more over the phone. Everything has kind of got a little bit more impersonal these days, and email has hugely taken over.
Yeah. So sorry, I didn't hear your question, Heidi.
Well, I was just kind of making a statement, really, just in the fact that actually, if the risk was there before, the problem with email is not only is there more of them, but we deal with them quickly without thinking.
I agree. And the thing is, people are under pressure. You know, they might be working from home, the phone is ringing, or they've got a next appointment, or there's a Zoom meeting coming up, or a client is calling, and the email comes in and they click on the link.
Carry on.
Worst case, you know, they get a PDF or they get a Word document and they open that Word document. Done.
Let's kind of talk about then some like more of the kind of common vulnerabilities that the property industry could overlook. What things do you see, and what things kind of could our letting agents or any of our customers or anyone that's listening could easily overlook?
Well, I think we've touched on it already, but let's talk about the systems that they use.
Yeah.
You know, so if I was a business owner of a property company right now, I would be looking at how data is being received and how data is being sent. So in other words, are they receiving data via WhatsApp, for instance? Are they receiving even by a text message or by any other method? How are you then protecting that data? How are you making sure that data is not currently by read or being seen or read by somebody else? How, you know, there was a very interesting article that was only released this morning by Which, and I'll gladly share the link so that you can share this when the podcast goes out. And they talked about the scammers stealing home deposits in callous conveyancy scams. And this is Lloyd's warning of a 29% rise in conveyancy fraud. And of course, the other thing they said, which I thought was even more alarming, was it was found that victims lost an average of £47,000, and around 45% of the victims were aged 39 or under.
Yeah.
Signaling that, you know, this means that first-time buyers are most in risk. And I'd love to share a story in a minute, if I may, about, you know, a young gent that actually lost £47,000. So what would that do to your business as an estate agent? Imagine this is your sister's brother who uses your company and you became responsible. Because believe me, when we do forensic analysis on any attack, we can normally trace where the attack originated. And that brings me on to people like you asked about other areas, which is, of course, your supply chain. So who's your supply chain? Your biggest one is your solicitor that you're dealing with. How do you know your solicitor is actually properly protected? Because if your solicitor gets compromised and that information gets sent to you and vice versa, that's where it all happens. Well, and this is why Which released this article today.
Well, I've actually got a story about that. So my friend Jo, who listens to the pod, so she'll be listening to this. Jo's a bit older than 39. She's 44. Buying kind of dream home, as you would. Her and her husband pretty clued up with the property sector, having worked in it for a huge number of years. When they went to pay their deposit money over to the solicitor, the bank details had got changed in the email and their money went to, well, God knows where, actually. It was not there. They only knew about it when the solicitor chased them because they hadn't received payment. And obviously at that point, it was kind of dawned on everybody how it had happened. That was shocking, like horrific. Luckily, in their scenario, they could still get the property. But for many people, that would be the end at that point in time.
Shame. Did they get their money back?
She did in the end. And I don't actually know how they did, but it took a really, really long time. It had a massive effect on her health because the stress of it was so huge. And the amount of kind of countless communications that had to happen before they got their money back was, you know, off the scale. Because everybody was blaming everybody. To your point, in the chain, nobody knew exactly where the hacker had got in. But the key thing was, is the bank details had been changed on that final email requesting payment.
Now, the other thing I was going to add to that story, right, is another part of this article that was released by Which today was that they said that the reimbursement limits for victims of these type of scams is currently set to 450,000, okay, by the payment system regulator. But at the moment, the banks are lobbying to reduce this limit down to 85,000.
Wow.
And I don't know about you, but if you buy a house, there's not many houses you can buy for 85,000.
Absolutely.
If one at all.
Yeah.
So yeah. which is a big problem. And I don't know if you also something else to contra what I just read. There are new regulations coming in October, which I don't know if it's good news or bad news. I think personally it's bad news for some people and good news for others. But as of October, banks will be forced, not only just the well-known banks, but also the online, you know, the what I call the cheap banks, which I highly recommend you don't use, by the way. They will also be forced to pay to refund up to 85% of if you've fallen for fraud. You see, okay. I've got an issue with that, because if people know that they can click on whatever they like and do whatever they like and, oh, it's okay, they're going to get their money back. Imagine how that's going to affect if that was in the motor industry. So there's a lot of regulations coming in. But then on the flip side, you know, there's a lot of EU regulations coming in, which means that if people are found not to have done or not secured their businesses properly or educated their staff properly, the chance of getting money back drops to nil.
Yeah. Scary.
And I think that business owners or property business owners need to take responsibility. You can't outsource this.
No, it's kind of one of those subjects, though, isn't it, that can be quite scary because it feels like it's complex and confusing. And sometimes, therefore, people put it in the too hard pile, you know, in terms of, oh, we'll get round to it one day. Oh, or I've got some insurance that will protect me against that. And therefore, I'm not going to kind of think about it. Actually, that's kind of what this pod is all about in terms of educating people to say, go and get some help. Go and talk. And actually, once you kind of know the facts, you'll feel a lot better about being able to protect yourself. But let's take the scenario where something has actually gone wrong. That let's kind of focus on the fact that if one of our listeners suspects that they have been a victim of a cyber attack, what are the immediate next steps that you would recommend they take?
Okay, so I've got a lot to say on this, as you can imagine, because we've dealt with these kind of cases so often. But I'm going to give you the top tip now that I give to everybody on this planet that deals with money transfers. So this applies, I think, beautifully to the property sector. Imagine you on the phone and you've just made a payment and you think, you know what, I wonder if I've just been scammed. Do you know what to do next, Heidi?
No.
Dial 159. Ever heard of 159?
Never heard of 159.
So here's the thing. If you dial 159 right now, somebody would answer the phone, or it's an automated system. So, you know, do you bank with Barclays or with Lloyd's or with one of the other banks? And then when it comes to your bank, you click number 1234, whatever.
Yeah.
That puts you straight through to the fraud department of that bank.
Right. So you don't have to spend looking around for numbers.
No. You don't have to look up your card or anything. You just really have to remember 159 and, of course, who you bank with, which should be obvious. But then immediately, the sooner, it's almost like, you know, when somebody's been in an accident, you've got those critical moments. The same applies here. The sooner you can get in touch with them, the sooner they can put a block or a hold on that transaction. So that, to me, is my top tip. So if we move away from that and we look at other things such as, you know, you, like you said, in that case where the solicitor phoned and wanted the money again, you need to get you need to speak to Action Fraud, number one, or to the National Cybersecurity Center. It depends how high, but Action Fraud is normally your go-to place immediately. And you can also speak to the local police, but I tell you, the local police, I'm going to tell you some shocking information now. Let me just distract myself a little bit. If I tell you, we work with Hertfordshire, Bedfordshire, and Cambridgeshire, just one of the close three big counties, how many cyber people do you think look after all the cyber crime in those three counties?
Oh, goodness. I don't even want to guess, but I know it now, it's going to be a very low number and fairly shocking based on the fact that it's rising.
Three, Heidi. Three.
Oh, wow. So one in each.
Which is unbelievable, considering how much money is lost every single minute of the day. There are so few people because they can't go to China or they can't go to North Korea or wherever to follow these people up. So, for instance, in those three counties, if you've lost less than £10,000, you will not even get a phone call back. So, but going back to your answer, so you, there's multiple scenarios here, because let's say you walk in one morning on a Monday morning and all your machines have been ransomed, which means you can't access anything. It's all been encrypted. You know, then you need to get a specialist involved, either like us or somebody else that you know, because then we need to come in and clean everything up. Your other, the other issue, of course, is you need to recover from your backup. But I tell you for a fact, Heidi, so many times we go into businesses where even the backups, and I'm talking about online backups, have been encrypted as well. Why? Because they've been sitting on your systems for months, and they now have the login details for your backup system. Or let's now go back to the supply chain. This is where it gets interesting. Your IT company gets hacked, and the IT company is using the same password for the backup solution for all their customers.
Everybody. Oh, no.
So now they've got carte blanche. So they don't just do you, but they'll do all of their customers at the same time. From what I've noticed, remember I said to you, I serve on 7 panels, the one with the home office at the moment. In the last year that we know of, over 300 IT companies have been hacked, which meant all their customers were hacked. And I always say to people, please don't blame the electrician when the roof starts leaking. Don't expect your IT company to be cyber specialists overnight. They are IT people, not cyber people. Mm-hmm. But so that's another scenario. So in other words, you've got to report it. This is the main thing for me, because in any company that involves, especially in the property sector, you've got so much personal data. So you've got to report to the ICO. The other thing which I'd recommend is you need to have a, what I call a cyber attack plan. Some people call it a cyber action plan. And again, Heidi, I'll gladly provide, I've got so many templates that people can use. And that cyber attack plan should be sitting not on a computer, because guess what, you've just lost a computer. It needs to be printed out, one A4 sheet, and it needs to be next to the coffee cups in the kitchen so that the most junior person can pick the piece of paper up and go, this is what we need to do. Step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Simple as that.
I think it's like business continuity planning, isn't it, really?
Same thing.
In terms of, you know, how, you know, you need to run a simulated test, how you need to kind of make sure you've got your contact information up to date, all of those things. But actually, you don't want to be doing it for the first time because you have to. You want to be doing it for the first time because you choose to, and you want to kind of plan it and see kind of what works and what doesn't, because we all learn, don't we, that way?
Well, we do. You know, one of my favorite things I do when I, when I'm with people, I say, give me your phone for half an hour. They go, no, I can't. I'm like, so imagine that's half an hour. You know that the national average now, I was with a company yesterday, for a business to recover from a cyber attack is 19 days.
Wow.
Do you know somebody that can not work for 19 days?
No, and I think our industry is so fast paced, and, you know, let's need to happen now. Rents need to be collected this afternoon. People need to move in tomorrow. You know, decisions need making every second of every day, and time is definitely not our friend in this sector. 19 days feels like a lifetime.
Yeah, it will be. And like you said with your friend, the stress that people go through. You know, I've dealt with some business owners who've had to take their kids out of private school, you know, and not go on holiday. And, you know, people split up over this. But for me, the biggest impact is the normally the staff.
Because, and the reputation, you know, this is a, you know, a business that I guess anybody that, you know, there's blood, sweat and tears that goes into it, isn't there, over such a long period of time for it to be destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, near enough destroyed so fast. Now, every time you talk about cybersecurity, and I mentioned that I obviously heard you talk earlier this year, but even hopefully people detect now from listening to the pod, you are so passionate about it. Is it a job? Or is it now more of a mission to you?
Well, remember before we started the session today, I told you that I've done over, I stopped counting after 350, since that's how many sessions I've done on cyber since the beginning of COVID. And we now have clients in 15 countries. And that's why I love doing it, because, you know, and my first mission, and maybe I'll tell you a quick story.
Yeah.
When I joined my first security panel, and this is just the year before COVID, I'm now officially, I'm now what they're known as a liveryman. So I can take a sheep across the bridge legally, you know, once a year, which I'm looking forward to doing this year. But I was sitting in this room. This was my first security panel with the WCIT, which is the Worshipful Company Information Technologists. Feels like a sentence. And I'm sitting there, and there are 40 people in the room. And I'm not joking. There's MI5 there, MI6. There's some top people in the room.
Wow.
And we go around and we introduce each other. And it's my turn. I said, my name is Francis Weston. My mission is to educate and protect at least 100,000 people from cybercrime. And the chairman said to me, which I know well now, he said, only 100,000? It should be at least 10 million. I said, okay, I'll tell you what, Roy, I'll meet you halfway. I'll do a million. And I'm glad to say I passed the million mark last October.
Oh, wow.
You know, with all the talks and stuff. So I eat, sleep and breathe this stuff because I love helping people and I love helping protecting people's livelihoods.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I'm normally the first one or one of my guys on the phone when I get that first call. And sometimes people are, I'm not joking, Heidi, they're crying on the phone.
Yeah.
And they go, you need to fix this. You need to fix this. I'm like, I can't fix the past, but I can fix the future for you.
Yeah. It's like one of those scenarios, isn't it? It's like hindsight, it's such a wonderful thing. It's like, that's the main message for people to take. Like, just go and get checked now. You know, that kind of comes up in so many things, doesn't it? Go and get checked now, because what you then know, you can control it and do something about it. At least you're kind of best protecting it. And I know you speak with so much conviction about it. I know you're hugely passionate about it. And we were also saying earlier in the fact that where people think sometimes they have protection in the form of insurance, we're not even sure if cyber insurance will exist in a few years' time, because the risk is becoming so great and the payout becoming potentially so high that insurance companies might not have the appetite to write business like that.
Absolutely. So in the UK, only 9% of companies, believe this or not, have cyber insurance right now. Now, if we consider that every 14 seconds a UK company is suffering a successful cyber attack that we know of, okay? Now, I was actually with the head of cyber insurance for Gallagher Insurance, lovely guy. And he said to me something at last Friday when we were at the Property One event. He said to me, Francis, let me tell you something. He says, I predict that within 2 years from now, companies like us will no longer provide cyber insurance. And I'm like, wow.
Mm.
I've been saying this for years because, you know, the threat it's just exponential every single day. You can no longer ignore this. You can't think that because you're a small company or because, why would they need my data? They love your data. Every single record that's sitting on your system now is worth a lot of money on the dark web.
Yeah.
So, and I always tell the story about the line. Have you heard my line story?
No, maybe? I haven't.
So when the line is chasing you, all you have to do is to outrun the person behind you. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Simple as that. And I believe cybersecurity works on the same principle. Because if you are, imagine there's a row of four estate agencies in one town.
Yeah.
And you are the best protected one of the four. Guess what? They'll go and do the other three. They won't touch you because they're after easy targets.
Yeah, it's harder. Too hard, too long. Not getting the reward and the money quick enough.
Yeah, I mean, let's say like a property market. I'm going to say something now which maybe is controversial, but I believe it's a fact. Out of the 18,000 estate agents that they have, I would say to you, not even 5% of them are adequately protected today, if not less. And that is why they are right now the number one or the most attacked sector in the UK.
And if we think about the money and the transactions that happen in our industry, whether it be in lettings, which is kind of more daily transactional, monthly collection of rent, or really the big massive transactions, you know, some of them huge, in a state agency, you can see why we're probably now the number one targeted sector.
It's easy money. If you can get into that sector, there's a lot of money to be made. You know, if they take even 9,500 from every state agent, or they just do one or two transactions. You know, we talked about ways of cyber attacks earlier. Another thing which I learned from one of my panels the other day was if you pay the ransom, you are 80% more likely to be done again within 18 months.
Oh, wow.
So our advice is always never, ever, ever, ever to pay the ransom, because number one, you've got no guarantee you're going to get your data back. And number two, you're going to go on a list. There's a list on the dark web that these people have paid the ransom. So then you are just going, do me again, please, do me again.
I mean, if we haven't convinced our listeners enough that obviously they need to do something, we're going to talk about what they can do. Just give me, you know, one or two stories of some of the, you know, worst cases that you know about or that you've been involved in or that you've been able to help over the last few years.
I'll tell you a recent one. This is it's funny that that report mentioned 47,000, because this was exactly what happened. This is a friend of mine's sister's son. This happened, was it February or March this year? I can't remember now. Anyway, so he's buying his first house.
Yeah.
You know, he's been saving up all his life. You know, he works for Tesco's, and he's been saving all his money, and he managed to save up £47,000. So he's ready to buy his first house. And I won't mention the names of the people, because we did the forensic analysis on this. First, the estate agent was compromised, hacked, whatever you want to call it. Then that spread to the solicitor involved.
Yeah.
So then they were monitoring the transaction of this this young gent and also many others. And at the last moment, they emailed this young boy just before he was meant to make his payment and change the bank details. And of course, he was so excited, no problem. And he just paid the money straight away, straight into the hacker's bank account. Now, the bank has still, as far as I know, has refused to give him his money back, because he pressed the pay now button. He's with, I'm not going to mention the name, starts with a B. But there were three warnings. Are you sure you're paying the right people? Are you sure you're paying the right? Are you sure? And he still paid the money. But he was excited. He's 21 years old.
Yeah.
The solicitor turned around and says, at the bottom of my emails, it clearly states that if we should never, ever accept change of payment details from us over email. But he was so excited, and he paid the money. Have you ever watched the program Scam Interceptors?
No, I haven't, but I love programs like that.
Oh, you'd love it. Heidi, you must go and watch it. It's on the second or third series. I can also recommend a lot of different podcasts, which you should listen to. But watch this, and you'll see all the stuff that we're talking about today and how these guys, they're brilliant. They're based in Scotland. I wish I could go and work with them. But they basically found a way where, you know, as the scammers on the call, they would intercept. So they basically put software on the people's machines. In this case, it was India. And they can actually see them, the people that they're phoning. And then they try to get through to the person and say, listen, you're about to lose a lot of money. It's brilliant. It's one of my favorite programs. I think they're on the second or third series now. I recommend everybody to go and watch these programs. It's called Scam Interceptor.
Okay, we'll have a look at that. Now, obviously, that's kind of life now. But like with anything, fraud, cyber attacks get way more sophisticated as people become more educated. So if we kind of look at emerging trends that you're starting to see and things that worry you the most, what are future challenges that we all need to maybe be aware of?
You know, a lot of people I speak to, they go, yeah, you know what? We do phishing simulations to our staff. We send them an email to see if they're going to click on the link, to educate them not to click on the stuff. We're telling them not to click on stuff. And my answer is always, why are you wasting your money and your time? Why you as a business owner are making the staff member responsible for making the decision in the first place whether this link is weaponized or not? Don't you think that's totally unfair? And they go, yeah, I see your point. Well, how can you fix the problem? I said, well, that's what we do all day. You need to remove the attacks from the inbox. That's how you fix this problem. Yeah. But coming back to your point about merging, and that kind of, it relates. So I did a talk not so long ago, it was I think last month, in front of 50 people about, it was actually around AI and cybersecurity. And I started the talk by saying, what is the biggest problem for a hacker and scammer? And people looked at me really, they were puzzled. I said, very simple. They've got a limited resource. In the same way that today, you know, everybody's probably listening to the talk, you know, you've got to find people, you've got to train them up, and eventually they leave. It's a nightmare. So hackers and scammers got the same problem.
Yeah.
To find people, train them up. There's a limited amount of people that they can do this with. Now that AI has kicked in, guess what? It's completely unlimited. My answer to this problem is you need to use AI to fight AI. Simple as that. Because then, and this is why most, for instance, antivirus solutions are failing every single second day. Why? Because it cannot detect behavior.
Yeah.
And the problem is, I'll give you an example. So 2 o'clock, let's say you use one of the known antivirus, you know, all the ones that you can buy in the shop. You know, 2 o'clock in the morning, when somebody is sending your property details to Korea or North Korea or to Russia or China, wherever, your antivirus software would think that you're working late. If you use an AI-based solution, it will build a picture of how you work. So in other words, normally Heidi works from 9 to 5:30 and she normally works on this laptop and this is her behavior. Now, all of a sudden, 2 o'clock in the morning, when files start leaving the computer, we would see there's an attack and stop the attack immediately.
Yeah,
that's how you fix this problem.
It is like a minefield, though, isn't it, in terms of complexity and how clever it's become. And that's, I guess, why experts like you exist, Francis.
Yes.
So as we promised at the beginning of the pod, we were going to kind of give our listeners a few hints and tips, I guess, of things that they might want to, you know, how you can protect them, make them a little bit safer today. And hopefully this will prompt people, if nothing else, to think, cool, crikey, if I'm walking around with my phone in my pocket and I've got this much risk just on my personal device, what potentially am I exposed to in business? Or what's my boss exposed to in business? Because we want anyone that hears this to obviously pass on the message.
So let's start with what I'm seeing in the industry is the biggest risk. And I did touch on it right at the beginning, and that's WhatsApp. People love WhatsApp. I don't think it's a good idea at all. I mean, but the problem is it's easy, it's quick. You don't have to worry about the size of the file because it's a 60 meg file and anyway and everything. So I want to ask people today that's listening to this and tell me, have you ever received a copy of a passport, a photo of a payroll, payslip, bank statements in WhatsApp? And if the answer is yes, and I can see people nodding already, my next question is, how are you protecting that data? And imagine somebody leaves, by the way, one of your people that work for you, and they've been receiving all this data. How do you make sure that that information was deleted off their phone or their iPad before they leave? Checklist. Remember to add that to your offboarding process. But let me show you two ways that you can make sure that nobody can get into your WhatsApp account. Because if you don't do the things that I'm going to show you now, anybody can potentially log into your WhatsApp account and look at every single message. And then I read some people wouldn't want to share the things that they share, but you know what I mean. So if you go into WhatsApp right now, if you open it up, and I'll do this at the same time so I can talk you through it. And now, depending on what kind of phone you're using, you're either going to use like an iPhone or what I call a non-iPhone, in other words, an Android or one of those. If you go into settings, so it's either bottom right or top right, you go into settings and then you go into account. And then if you go in account, you'll see two-step verification. My biggest, I mean, when we did the thing together, remember when I was at the Women in Sales Agency, there were 400 people in the room. And out of the 400, I think 11 people put their hands up to say that they had this turned on.
Yeah. I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. So that's step number one, and you turn it on, and you know, people say, but this is painful. No, it's not painful. I tell you what's more painful. Getting hacked or scammed is infinitely more painful than putting a few steps in that would stop other people from accessing your data. The other thing is, well, you've got to keep in mind is, you know, your phone is lying on the desk and your kids pick it up. What information can they see about your customers on the iPad? You know, that's private information. So anyway, so that's the first thing I recommend you do. Okay, so once you've done that, go back two steps and you'll go back to under settings. There's another section called privacy. If you scroll all the way down, there's a section called app lock. Have you got yours turned on, Heidi?
Yeah, Face ID.
Brilliant. So turn on the Face ID, set it to immediate. Why? Because from that second forward, every single time you pick that phone up and you go into WhatsApp, it might not prompt you for your 6-digit code, but it'll prompt you for your face.
Yeah. And you're looking at it anyway.
Precisely.
So it's no hassle, is it?
No. And what it will do, it won't ask you for the 6-digit code every time. It'll only every now and again, it will check. Hold on a second. Let me just check it's you.
Yep.
And that's one thing. Now, I'm sure that most of the people, I'm going to show you something new that I learned about only a couple of weeks ago, which I think is so important. Did you know that in London, there is a phone stolen every 10 minutes? So in other words, you're walking in the road, imagine, and somebody drives by or they walk past and they rip the phone off you. Happened to one of the guys who works for an estate agency, 19 years old, 11 o'clock at Piccadilly Circus a few weekends ago, Saturday night, and they ripped his phone off on me. So, yeah. So now what happened was immediately they went in and they changed the Apple ID.
Because he was on his phone, I guess. So
he was. The phone was still unlocked, right?
Yep.
Then they started sending messages to his mom. Now, bear in mind, he still doesn't have a phone. He's still trying to get, you know, telling his mom, listen, mom, I'm stranded. I need money, this, that, and the other. Then, I mean, it just went absolutely wild. It took him, we only heard about this on the Monday, and we helped him to recover his phone. But that's, you know, park that for a minute. So my point that I'm making, number one, you need to set your timeout on your phone, you know, when your phone goes back to lock mode, as low as possible. So on an iPhone, that's 30 seconds. On a non-iPhone, you can set it down to 15 seconds. Why? Okay. Because if somebody picks up that phone immediately, because if you think about everything that you use during the day, you've got your PC, your Mac, your whatever, and you've got your phone. From your phone is your biggest asset. Everything you can access from that phone. Do you agree? Your bank, your Reddit, your email, everything. Yeah. Now, I want to show you another top tip. Now, if you've got an iPhone, I want you to go into settings.
I'll go slowly.
Okay, let's do this with you, Heidi, because you've never heard this one before. Go into settings, and then I want you to go to, where is it called? Face ID and passcode.
Yeah.
I hope, is it prompting you for a code?
Oh, yeah, I've got to put my passcode in, yeah.
Great. Now scroll all the way down to stolen device protection. Tell me you've got that turned on.
No.
Now, let me tell you a story, right? Heidi,
that's in the middle of the screen for anyone in the middle, doing it.
Yeah, that's it. And I'm doing a post on this on tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. And I've got a video as well, which I'm going to share with you, Heidi, that goes through the step-by-step and the reasons why. If you don't have this turned on, and you can grab that phone, you can go and turn off your Apple ID, you can go and change the passwords, you can do everything in a few minutes. The moment you turn this thing on, this is where the brilliance come in. Apple is so clever. It detects that you're not at the office and it detects that you're not at home.
Yeah.
So the moment it knows that, you cannot go and change anything. You have to wait. So even if you did Face ID and you train your face, it waits another hour and then you've got to do Face ID again. And only then can you go and change any password. I think it's brilliant.
Oh, clever.
Very, very, very good. I love it. For me, it's one of the top things that they've done so far. Protecting people's phone, because that's the thing, because once people get into your Apple iCloud account, you're done, because they've got all your photos, they've got the whole of your entire life. And that's why I'm saying protect your phone like it's better than a child, you know.
Our lives are on our phones though, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So now I want to show something else to people. Again, sorry, I'm using iPhones as an example, but a lot of people don't use iPhones mainly. So if you go back into settings and you look and you start typing the word passwords, up comes the word passwords and there's a little gray box with a white key in it.
Yep.
And if you click on that, you will see second from the top, the very top now, it says security recommendations. Come on, Heidi, be honest. What's your set to still?
My security recommendations say 161.
You need to get a lovely bottle of wine or two or three.
Yeah.
And sit there and go through this and go and fix them.
Right.
Because right now,
that's going to be a big bottle of wine by the looks of 161.
You've got 161 current passwords that have been compromised sitting on your phone.
Okay, great.
Okay. Can I share with you one more?
So how is that compromised then? Like, because...
Well, if you click into it, have a look at it. You're going to be shocked which ones have been. So let me explain. All right.
Yeah.
Let's say you use LinkedIn, which a lot of people do, right?
Yep.
And I don't know if you've seen, LinkedIn has been breached so many times. Now, as a hacker, let's put my hacker hat on. I've now just stolen the whole database of LinkedIn. What do? I go and sell it on the dark web for less than one penny per record. So now all this stolen data is now sitting on the dark web. So what the phone is doing, and also the non-owned phones do this as well, will then go and monitor the dark web. And the moment they see, oh, your LinkedIn password has been now for sale, it'll pop up on your phone and say, hey, go and change your LinkedIn password because it's now for sale. You know what people do? They click the ignore button.
No.
But here's the problem. It gets deeper, Heidi. They use the same password for Repit and for their CRM and for their zero accounting and for their LinkedIn.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you very
so
much.
So we can remember them all.
And this is why one of the first things that we do for say agents, we implement what I call an enterprise password manager. Why? Because then not only can you never have to remember another password again, but you can make sure that that every single password is at least 20 characters long, which takes on average about 1.3 sextillion years to crack.
Right.
Now, sorry to tell you, we're all going to be dead by then. So it doesn't matter, does it?
We're safe.
We're safe. But once you get control over your passwords, and you know, then you don't have to change your password every 90 days. It's the worst advice that you can ever get. The only time you ever need to change a password is if it's been compromised. And what I said to Heidi earlier, for all the listeners, that I think we should do separate sessions on different topics. Because then I can really deep dive and show people, for instance, how to create, you know, a strong password and what's best, you know, processes or things to do within the business to be better protected as well.
So we're going to bite Francis's hand off for that, because I think all of you would love to see more. We're going to run them as webinars so we can actually do a bit more interactive on the screen as well. So you can see as well as hear. But obviously we're going to run it as well, that if you just want to listen to it, that will still work for you. Now, I think this is probably one of the longest pod recordings that we've done, but for real good reason. And what we're going to do is we're going to go and do some of this testing and let Francis loose on our business to come and do some checking, and then we're going to record another pod to kind of report back all the things that we've learned so that we can share some real business insights with you. But Francis, before you go, we always ask our regular listeners of Let's Talk Let's and in every podcast if they have any funny story or anecdotes. I'm sure you don't deal with a lot of humor, really, in terms of your world. It's usually pretty serious stuff. But have you got one that you can share with us today?
Yes, I do. I do. Okay.
Good.
I found one. Okay. So this is kind of scary, but funny, I think. You know, it depends how you look at this, right? But so the other day, I'm speaking to a lady who owns an estate agency. And whilst I'm talking to her on the phone, on Zoom, I went and I put her email domain into the dark web, because we have a tool that we can extract any company's passwords or compromised passwords within seconds from the dark web legally, right? So anyway, so at one point, I said to her, Jane, how's Lola doing? She looked at me really puzzled. She says, Francis, thanks for asking, but my dog died 3 years ago. I said, I'm so sorry to hear. And then the penny drops. Says, how did you know that? I said, because you're using it in all your passwords.
Passwords, yeah. I'm not going to make any comment here.
She had Lola dog. I'm like, anyway, I said, please. Now you can see. If I can see it, anybody on the planet can see it. You must so she used the same password, but she used that animal who's now died 3 years ago. So that's quite funny, but it's serious, if you know what.
Yeah. Well, it also shows how long we keep their passwords for.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure she probably used the password originally when the dog was alive, and it just kind of carries on. So it's out there for such a long, extended period of time.
But can I share with you another one?
Go on then.
Now, what I'm showing on the screen, people can't see, is a duck. I call it my cyber duck. It's a lovely duck. And it's branded
like a rubber duck for everybody.
Yeah, like a little rubber duck. And we now have the ability, if people, and again, out of every 100 companies we test, I'm telling you, two companies will have this correctly configured. When you set up any email domain, I'm going to get a little bit technical now. You need to set up your SPF records, your DKIM and your DMARC records. These are called email security records. Now, if I tell you that out of every 100 companies we test, only two will have this properly configured, That means I can send you an email from Donald Duck at your domain name to yourself. That's not funny. It's funny, but not good, because if I can send emails as you, can you imagine now how easy the impersonation attacks happen?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now you understand my frustration, because I'm showing people this stuff and they go, oh, I'll speak to my IT department, fix it. What? The same one that didn't fix it in the first place. People don't even know this stuff.
For directors of businesses or senior managers or people that lead teams, it does become a responsibility, doesn't it, for all of us to make sure that that can't happen. Because near enough, exactly. If your email address is transposed to, you know, one of your staff or a junior member of the team, or, you know, with instructions from you to go and do something, you know, they're likely to do it, aren't they? Really?
They are. And I do it in such a way that I can send, you know, if the company doesn't have this in place, which they don't normally, I can send an email from any of their staff. So imagine I'm sending email from the CEO to the CFO. A company down the road here just lost 1.6 million because of that in 20 minutes. And when we checked them out, they were on BBC News. You know, I could probably mention their name, and I went back to them and I said, this is because I spoke to the reporter of BBC News on Moneybox. And I said to him, I can show you why this company got down. And then I sent this guy a message. I said, listen, I'm literally a mile from your office. You are still completely open to attack. Never got a response from him.
Oh, no. Oh, wow.
Do you know?
Right.
But anyway, see.
So I'm going to draw it to a close, and we're going to wait for installment number 2 and 3 and 4, I'm sure. But for all of our listeners, to ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, and hopefully you're never going to want to miss one like today, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave us a review. Go and take all the tips that Francis has given you. Hopefully, most of you are probably listening to this on your phone as we're doing it. And thank you all very much for listening. And a big thank you to you, Francis.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.